No barking either. Now that she thought of it, there had been no talk of a dog when she and her aunt had paid their visit. Having made her way inside the wall, she hid behind some shrubs and appraised her situation. Her throat was dry. I stole in here like a burglar, she thought. I'm breaking the law. This is trespassing, no doubt about it. The cameras have recorded proof of my guilt. Had she made the right move? She wasn't sure. When she had seen the delivery van pass through the gate, her response had been automatic. She'd had no time to consider the possible consequences. Now's my one and only chance, she'd thought, and acted on the spur of the moment. Her body had moved before her mind clicked in, yet for some reason, even now, she had no second thoughts. From her hiding place, she saw the delivery van roll back up the driveway. Once again, the gate slowly swung open and the van passed through. If she was going to leave, now was the time. Just run out before the gate closed. Return to the world of safety. She wouldn't be a criminal. But she didn't move. Instead, she remained there, hidden in the shadows, and watched the gate close again, intently biting her lower lip. She waited there for precisely 10 minutes, measuring the time on her small Casio G-Shock watch. When the 10 minutes were up, she emerged from the shrubbery. Bending low so the cameras would have difficulty spotting her, she hurried down the gentle slope toward the front door of the house. It was 2:30. What if Manshiki discovered her? She thought about that for a moment. Well, she decided, if that happened, she'd wriggle out of it somehow. Manshiki seemed to have a keen interest, or something like that, in her. So if she told him she'd just come to say hi and, seeing the gate open, had walked in and made it all seem like a kid's game, he would trust her. He wants to believe in something, she thought, so he'll swallow what I say. The problem was, where did his keen interest come from? And did he have good intentions, or was he dangerous? The front door of the mansion was around the bend at the bottom of the sloping driveway. There was a bell beside the door. Needless to say, she didn't push it. Instead, she moved clockwise around the building, hiding behind trees and shrubs, hugging the concrete wall and giving the roundabout where guests parked a wide berth. A 2-car garage sat to the left of the entranceway. Its door was rolled down and locked. A little farther on sat a stylish little building that looked like a cottage. That must be the guest house, she thought. Beyond that was a tennis court. She had never seen a home with a tennis court before. Who did Mr. Manshiki play tennis with? The court, however, appeared to have been long ignored. It had no net, its all-weather surface was strewn with leaves, and the white lines were so faded they were almost invisible. All the windows facing the mountainside were small and tightly shuttered, so nothing inside could be seen. As before, the house was absolutely quiet. No barking dogs. From time to time, she could hear birds chirping high in the trees, but that was all. At the back of the house was another garage, also with space for 2 cars. It seemed to have been added after the house was built. Manshiki sure could store an awful lot of cars. The slope behind the house had been turned into a large Japanese-style garden. She could see a descending flight of steps, and below that, a path weaving through a number of large rocks. The azalea bushes were pruned to perfection, the pine branches overhead an array of bright greens. What looked like an arbor lay just beyond. A reclining chair where one could stretch out and read sat under the arbor. Beside it was a coffee table. Lanterns and lights were scattered here and there. Maria worked her way around the house to the back. The house's broad deck looked from there out over the valley. She had walked out onto that deck on her first visit. It was from there that Manshiki kept watch on her home. The second she set foot on it, she knew that was true. She felt it in her bones. Maria squinted as she looked over at her home. It was right across from her. So close it seemed a person could reach out and touch it, if that person had pretty long arms, that is. From this vantage point, the house looked utterly defenseless. At the time it was built, there had been no homes on this side of the valley. Only recently, though more than 10 years ago, had building restrictions been eased and houses erected on this slope. That was why, when her home was designed, no attempt had been made to shield it from those across the way. That made it a sitting duck for prying eyes. A high-powered telescope, or even a pair of good binoculars, would give one a clear view of what was going on inside. The window to her bedroom was a perfect example. To be sure, she was a cautious girl. She always closed the curtain before taking off her clothes. But that didn't mean there were no unguarded moments. What had Manshiki seen? Maria descended the outside steps to the next floor where the study was, but the windows were shuttered there too. She couldn't peek in at all, so she kept walking down to the lowest level. Most of that floor was occupied by a large utility area. She could see a washing machine, a place for an ironing board, a room that seemed to be set aside for a live-in maid, and, on the far end, a sizable gym containing 5 or 6 exercise machines. Unlike the tennis court, these appeared to be well used. They all looked clean and well oiled. A heavy punching bag hung from the ceiling. Compared with the upper floors, this floor was less tightly guarded. Many of the windows lacked curtains, so she could peer inside. Nevertheless, both the windows and the sliding glass doors were securely locked from within. Here, too, the security company had pasted their stickers to scare off intruders. An alarm would sound in their offices if anyone tried to force their way in. The mansion was huge. She found it impossible to believe that a single person could inhabit such a big space. It must be a lonely life. The concrete walls were thick, and every precaution had been taken to block anyone from gaining entry. True, there was no guard dog. Maybe he didn't like dogs either. But apart from that, every anti-burglar device under the sun had been employed. What should be her next step? Nothing came to mind. There was no way to get inside, and no way to breach the wall to get out. Manshiki was home, she knew that. He had pushed the button that opened the gate and taken delivery of the parcel. And he lived there by himself. Once a week a cleaning service came, but apart from that, the house was off limits to outsiders. That was his basic principle. He had told them that on their visit. Since she couldn't gain access to the house, she had to find a place to hide outside. If she kept poking around, she might locate a likely spot. After a long search, she finally came across what seemed to be a small storage shed at the far corner of the garden. The door was unlocked. Inside were a bunch of garden tools and stacked bags of fertilizer. She slipped in and sat down on the bags. The shed was far from inviting, but at least the security cameras wouldn't find her here. And it was unlikely anyone would show up. Sooner or later, things would change. All she could do was wait. Although she was stuck in one place, she felt full of energy. After her shower that morning, she had noticed swellings on her chest in the mirror. It was an exciting development. Of course, she might be deluding herself. It could just be wishful thinking. She had inspected her chest from a number of angles and touched it with her hands. There did seem to be 2 soft protuberances that had not been there before. Her nipples were still tiny, a far cry from her aunt's, which resembled olive pits, but there was a hint they might be about to sprout. Maria passed her time in the storage shed, thinking about her budding breasts. She pictured how they might look when they grew. What would it feel like to live your life with really big ones? She imagined strapping on the kind of underwire bra her aunt used. That day was still miles away, however. After all, her periods had only begun that spring. She was a little thirsty, but she could bear that. She consulted her chunky G-Shock watch. It was 3:05. Her painting class was on Fridays, but she'd been planning to skip that anyway. She hadn't brought her bag of painting supplies with her. Yet her aunt was sure to worry if she didn't get home by dinner time. She could come up with a good excuse later. She seemed to have fallen asleep. It was hard to believe that she could have slept in this place and under these circumstances, yet she had managed to drop off without realizing it. It hadn't been for very long, 10 or 15 minutes, maybe less, but a deep sleep nonetheless. She was disoriented when she awoke, her mind at loose ends. For a moment, she didn't know where she was or what she was doing. It seemed she had been dreaming, a vague dream, something to do with full breasts and milk chocolate. Her mouth was filled with saliva. Then it hit her. "I snuck into Manshiki's," she remembered, "and now I'm hiding in his storage shed." A noise had roused her, a repetitive mechanical noise. To be more precise, a garage door clattering open. The door of the garage near the entrance. Manshiki was probably in his car and about to head off somewhere. Maria hurried from the shed and ran around to the front, making as little sound as possible. When the door was fully open, the clattering stopped. She heard a car start up, and then the front of Manshiki's silver Jaguar slowly emerged. Manshiki was sitting in the driver's seat. The driver's window was down, and his pure white hair glowed in the afternoon sun. She watched from behind the shrubbery. Had Manshiki looked to his right, he could have glimpsed her there in the shadows. The shrubs were too small to provide full cover, but his eyes were trained straight ahead. Hands on the wheel, he seemed lost in thought. The Jaguar moved up the driveway, passed around the curve, and disappeared. The remote control activated metal door began to clatter down again. The second before it closed, Maria raced from her hiding place and slipped under the door, like Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Another reflex action. Without really thinking, she had decided to gain access to the house through the garage. The automatic door hesitated when it sensed her slide underneath, then resumed its descent until it was tightly shut. Another car was in the garage. A stylish blue convertible with a beige hood, the sports car her aunt had admired on their previous visit. Maria couldn't care less about cars, so she'd barely glanced at it then. It had a very long nose, and here, too, the Jaguar crest. Even someone who knew as little about cars as Maria could tell it was worth a lot of money, a collector's piece, in all likelihood. A person could pass into the house through a door in the garage. She tried the knob with some trepidation, but it turned easily. She sighed with relief. Few people would lock a door like that during the day, but Manshiki was such a cautious man, she couldn't be sure. Perhaps something had been on his mind to make him forget. She'd been lucky. She walked through the door and into the house. Should she take her shoes off or keep them on? In the end, she decided to carry them with her. Leaving them on the doorstep didn't seem like a good option. The house was hushed when she entered, as if everything in it was holding its breath. Manshiki was gone, and she was positive no one else was there. "I'm alone in this huge house," she thought. "For the next little while, I am free to go wherever and do whatever I want." Manshiki had given them a basic guided tour on their first visit. She remembered it well enough. The general layout was fixed in her head. She entered the big living room that took up almost the entire first floor. From there, one could go out to the broad deck through a sliding glass door. She hesitated, though. Manshiki might have activated the security system before leaving. If he had, an alarm would go off when she tried to slide it open. A light would flash in the agency's office. They would phone the house to check. A password would be necessary to end the alert. Maria stood before the sliding door, black loafers in hand, pondering the situation. Finally, she reached the conclusion that Manshiki hadn't set the alarm. The fact that he had left the inner door in the garage unlocked suggested that he wasn't heading off on a long trip. Odds were he had gone shopping or was running some sort of errand. Maria made up her mind. She unlocked the door, slid it open, and waited to see what would happen. No alarm went off, and the security agency did not phone. She heaved a sigh of relief. Had security guards found her there, she couldn't have joked her way out of it, and stepped out onto the deck. Putting down her shoes, she went over to the binoculars and removed their plastic cover. They were too heavy to hold, so she tried balancing them on the railing, but that didn't work very well. Looking around, she noticed what looked like a stand leaning against the wall. It resembled a camera tripod and was the same olive color as the binoculars. The binoculars could be screwed onto the stand. She stuck them together, pulled up the low metal stool left nearby, sat down, and looked through them. Now, using the binoculars was easy. Moreover, they were positioned so that she couldn't be observed from the other side of the valley. This had to be how Manshiki spent much of his time. She was shocked at how clearly the inside of her house could be seen. Everything was a notch brighter, one of the binoculars' special features, she assumed. Some of the curtains in the rooms facing the valley hadn't been drawn. The view within was so distinct she felt she could reach out and touch what she was looking at. A vase of flowers, for example, or even a magazine on the table. Her aunt should be home at this hour, but she couldn't locate her anywhere. It was weird to look inside her own house from such a distance and in such naked detail. It felt as if she had become one of the dead, how was unclear, and now was viewing her home from their vantage point. She had belonged there for so long, yet it was hers no more. She knew it so intimately, but could never go back. It was a strange, dissociated sensation. She trained the binoculars on her own room. It faced in her direction, but the curtain was drawn, shut tight, without a crack. Her familiar curtain with its orange pattern, the orange bleached by the sun. She couldn't see behind it, but her shadow was probably visible at night, when the light was on. How visible, though, could only be known after dark. Maria panned across the house, looking for her aunt. She ought to be there, but she was nowhere to be seen. Perhaps she was preparing dinner in the kitchen in the back, or resting in her room. Wherever she wasn't visible from this angle. Maria felt a powerful urge to go back to that house, right away. She longed to sit in her familiar chair at the dining room table and sip hot tea in her very own cup, to watch her aunt preparing dinner in the kitchen. How wonderful that would be, she thought. Until that point, she had never imagined missing her home this way, not for a second. To her, the house had always been an ugly, barren monstrosity. She had hated living there. In fact, she was impatient for the day when she was old enough to move into her own place, one that suited her. Yet now, looking at its interior from the other side of the valley through the clear lens, she wanted to return at any cost. It was where she belonged, where she would be protected. Just then, she heard a faint, droning sound. Prying her eyes from the binoculars, she saw something black circling above her. A large bee with a long body, probably a hornet. The kind of hostile, aggressive hornet with a sharp stinger that had killed her mother. Maria ran back into the house, forcefully slid the door shut and locked it. The hornet buzzed around the door for a while, as if to pen her in. It struck the glass several times, then finally gave up and flew away. Maria gave a great sigh of relief. Her heart was pounding, her breathing ragged. Nothing scared her more than hornets. Her father had lectured her time and again how dangerous they were. Maria had looked at many photographs so that she knew exactly how they looked. In the process, she had conceived the terrifying idea that she, like her mother, would be stung to death. She might well have the same allergic reaction. One couldn't escape death, but it should come later. She wanted to know what it felt like to have full breasts and a woman's nipples at least once before she died. It would really suck if hornets killed her before she had that chance. It was better to stay in the house a while, for safety's sake. That savage insect would still be flying about. Moreover, it appeared to be targeting her. She decided to search inside the mansion and forget about going outside for the time being. Her first step was to tour the sprawling living room. She could see no particular change since her first visit. There was the big Steinway grand piano. A small stack of musical scores was piled on top of it. A Bach invention, a Mozart sonata, one of Chopin's etudes, that sort of thing. Nothing that required advanced technical skill. Still, being able to play them at all was impressive. Maria could tell that much. She had taken piano lessons when she was younger. She hadn't gone very far. Art was what had grabbed her. A number of books were scattered on the coffee table's marble top. Judging from the bookmarks stuck in them, all were in the process of being read. One was on philosophy, one was historical, and two were novels, one of which was in English. She recognized none of the titles and had heard of none of the author's names. She flipped through several, but they weren't her thing. The master of the house loved difficult books and classical music. Between those pursuits, he looked into her home across the valley through high-powered binoculars. Was he just a perv? Or was there a logical reason or purpose for his behavior? Did he have the hots for her aunt? Or for her? Or for both of them? Was such a thing possible? Next, she went to take a look at the lower levels. First, she made her way to Menshiki's study. His portrait hung on the wall. She stood in the middle of the room and studied it for a moment. Of course, she had seen it before. That had been the purpose of their first visit. This time, though, the longer she looked at it, the more it felt as if Menshiki were there with her. So she turned away from the painting. Trying her best to ignore it, she went over to inspect his desk. There was a state-of-the-art Apple desktop computer, but she didn't switch it on. She knew without trying that it was secured. There would be no way she could gain access. Not much else was on the desk. There was a desk pad calendar with almost nothing written on it, just a few incomprehensible symbols and numbers here and there. He would have input his daily schedule into the computer and then shared it with his other devices. All would be locked. Mr. Menshiki was a cautious man. He would leave no traces. The other things on the desk were the sort of work-related materials you would expect to find in anyone's study. The pencils were all of the same length and sharpened to a fine point. Paper clips were arranged according to size. The white memo pad waited patiently for someone to write on it. The digital clock faithfully clicked off the time. The desk was in such perfect order, it was frightening. Unless he's a well-made android, Maria thought to herself, something sure is funny about Mr. Menshiki. As she expected, every desk drawer was locked. That was only natural. No way he would neglect securing them. The study held little else that she wanted to see. She had no special interest in the shelves of books or the CD collection or the new, obviously expensive stereo system. Those did no more than reflect his range of tastes. They didn't help her understand who he was as a person. They had no connection to the secret he was, most likely, concealing. Maria left the study and walked down the dim hallway, checking the rooms as she went. All were unlocked. None had been included in the house tour. She and her aunt had only been shown the living room, the study, the dining room, and the kitchen. She had also used the guest bathroom on the first floor. Maria opened the doors to these unknown rooms one by one. The first was Manshiki's bedroom. As the so-called master bedroom, she assumed, it was very big. It had a walk-in closet and a private bathroom. Its large bed was neatly turned out with a quilted duvet. Since there was no live-in maid, she assumed Manshiki had made the bed. If so, its neatness didn't surprise her. A pair of plain dark brown pajamas lay next to the pillow, also neatly folded. A number of prints hung on the wall. A set by a single artist, from the looks of it. A half-read book rested on the bedside table. He certainly was an avid reader. The window faced the valley, but it wasn't very large, and its blinds had been drawn. She opened the door to the big walk-in closet. Rows of clothes were hanging there. Lots of jackets and blazers, but not many suits. Not many neckties, either. She guessed he seldom needed to dress for formal occasions. All the shirts had plastic covers and appeared to have just come back from the cleaners. Shoes and sneakers were lined up on shelves in neat rows. Coats of varied thicknesses occupied another part of the closet. Everything in the closet was looked after with care and reflected the good taste of its owner. Indeed, the whole closet could have been featured as it was in a menswear magazine. There were not too many clothes, nor too few. Moderation governed everything. His drawers contained socks, handkerchiefs, and underwear. All were pressed and folded and arranged in perfect order. There were more drawers for his jeans, polo shirts, sweatshirts, and so forth. One large drawer had been entirely given over to a colorful array of beautiful sweaters. None had patterns. Yet Maria could find nothing in any of these drawers to help her unravel Manshiki's secret. Everything was immaculate and divided according to its function. Not a speck of dust was on the floor, and all the picture frames were level on the walls. Maria did reach one clear conclusion about Manshiki, however. This man would be impossible to live with. No normal person could meet his standard. Her aunt was something of a neat freak, but even she wasn't this meticulous. The next door opened onto what appeared to be the guest room. It had a double bed, made up and ready to be used. A writing desk and office chair sat near the window. There was also a small television set, but there was no sign that anyone had ever slept there. The room felt as if it had been forsaken for eternity. Mr. Manshiki was not in the habit of entertaining guests, it seemed. Instead, this room was apparently to be used in emergencies, though she couldn't imagine what those might be. The room next door was more like a storeroom. It had no furniture, and at least 10 cardboard boxes were stacked on the green carpet. Judging by their weight, they contained documents. Each had a label with markings in ballpoint pen. All were carefully sealed with tape. Maria imagined they were filled with work-related documents. Those might contain important secrets, but they were business secrets. Not the sort of thing that she was after. None of these rooms was locked. Though their windows faced the valley, their blinds were closed. No one was there to delight in the bright sunlight and the majestic view. They were dimly lit and smelled of abandonment. The fourth room fascinated her. Not so much the room itself, though. The furnishings were sparse, just a single straight-backed chair and a small, plain wooden table. No pictures graced the bare walls. Without decoration of any kind, it felt barren and empty, a room no one ever used. Yet when she checked the walk-in closet, she found an assortment of women's clothes hanging there. Not a huge number, but everything a woman would need, more or less, for a stay of several days. Maria guessed the clothes had been set aside for someone who came to visit Manshiki on a regular basis. She scowled. Did her aunt know a woman like that was in the picture? She quickly realized her mistake, however. The clothes were all out of style, designs from a different era. The dresses and skirts and blouses sported name brands and were very fashionable and expensive, but not the sort that women wore these days. Maria wasn't that up to date on current trends, but even she could tell that much. They had probably been in style before she was born, and all were permeated with the smell of mothballs. It appeared that the clothes had been hanging there for quite some time. They were being well looked after, though. She saw no moth holes, and the colors hadn't faded, which meant that care had been taken not to expose them to extreme heat or cold. The dresses were size 5. That indicated that the woman was about 5 feet tall and very slender, looking at the skirts. She wore a size 5 shoe. An assortment of women's undergarments, socks, and nightgowns were stored in the closet drawers. All were in plastic bags to ward off dust. She pulled a few out to examine. The bras were a 32C. Maria pictured the shape of the breasts they had held. Slightly smaller than her aunt's, she estimated. It was impossible to guess the shape of the nipples, of course. The panties were dainty and elegant. Some were on the sexy side. All in all, they spoke of a woman of some means who shopped in lingerie boutiques while savoring the thought of embracing the man she loved. They were made of silk and lace and had to be washed by hand in lukewarm water. Not the sort of panties one wore to weed the garden. Here, too, the odor of mothballs was strong. She folded the panties up carefully, returned them to the plastic bag, and put it back in the drawer. This was the wardrobe of a woman whom Manshiki had been seeing some time before, 15 or 20 years ago, most likely. That was the conclusion Maria drew. Then something had happened that caused the woman to leave her stylish clothes, her size 5 dresses, size 5 shoes, and 32C bras, behind. She had never come back. Why would she have left such an expensive collection behind? If they had separated for some reason, wouldn't the normal thing have been to take the clothes with her? Maria couldn't figure it out. Moreover, Manshiki had preserved that small collection with such care. Like the river sprites of the Rhine, who took pains to preserve their legendary gold for posterity. He probably visited this room on occasion to look at the clothes and take them in his hands. When the seasons changed, he would replace the mothballs. She couldn't imagine him letting anyone else do this. Where was that woman today? Perhaps she had married another man, or died of illness, or in some kind of accident. Nevertheless, he held her in his memory, even now. Of course, Maria had no way of knowing that woman was her mother, and I could find no compelling reason to tell her. That right, I thought, belonged to Manshiki alone. Maria pondered this new knowledge. Should she think more generously of a man who had treasured the memory of a woman for so long? Or was the fact that he had preserved her clothing with such care a little creepy? Maria was still thinking this through when, all at once, she heard the garage door clattering up. Manshiki had come home. She had been so absorbed in the clothes that she hadn't heard the front gate open or the car in the driveway. She had to get away as quickly as possible. She needed to find a safe place to hide. Then she realized something of vital importance. Panic grabbed her. She had forgotten her shoes on the deck, and the binoculars were out of their case and attached to their stand. The hornet had scared her so much that she had fled into the house without covering her tracks. Everything was out in the open. When Manshiki went out to the deck and saw those things, as he would sooner or later, he would know right away that someone had invaded his home in his absence. The black loafers would tell him that the invader was a girl. Manshiki was no dummy. It wouldn't take long for him to figure out it was Maria. He would comb the house, searching every nook and cranny, until he found her hiding place. It would be child's play for him. There wasn't time enough to run outside, up to the deck, collect her shoes, and put the binoculars back where they belonged. She was certain to bump into Manshiki somewhere along the way. She couldn't think of a next step. Her heart pounded. Her breathing became labored, her limbs froze with fear. The car engine stopped, and the garage door started clattering shut. Any minute now Manshiki would enter the house. What should she do? What should she... Her mind was a blank. She sat on the floor, her head in her hands, and her eyes squeezed shut. "It is best to remain where you are," someone said. Was she hearing things? No, she wasn't. Pulling herself together, she opened her eyes. There was a little old man, no more than 2 feet tall, perched on a low chest of drawers. His salt and pepper hair was tied in a bun on top of his head. He wore white garments from a bygone age, and carried a tiny sword at his waist. Naturally, she thought she was hallucinating. Her panic was making her imagine things that weren't there. "No, this is no hallucination," the little old man said in a small but resonant voice. "I am the Commendatore, and I am here to aid my young friends." Chapter 61. I have to be a brave, smart girl. "This is no hallucination," the Commendatore repeated. "There are sundry opinions as to whether I exist, but a hallucination I am not. I have come to aid my friends. You are in need of aid, are you not?" "My friends" referred to her, Maria assumed. She nodded. His manner of speech was strange indeed, but what he said was true. She needed help, no question there. "My friends cannot retrieve your shoes from the deck," the Commendatore said, "and it is best to forget the binoculars as well. But quell your fears. I will strive my utmost to ensure that Manshiki does not go there. For the time being, at least. Once the sun sets, however, I cannot prevent him. When darkness falls, he will venture out to watch the home of my friends. This is his custom. We must fix the problem before that happens. Can my friends understand the import of my words?" Maria could only nod. Somehow, she did understand. "My friends must hide in this closet a while," said the Commendatore. "Be as quiet as a mouse. Give no sign that you are here. When the time is propitious, I will let you know. Until then, do not move or make a sound, no matter what happens. Do my friends understand?" Maria nodded again. Was this a dream? Could he be an elf or sprite of some kind? "I am neither dream nor sprite," the Commendatore read her thoughts. "I am an idea, and thus lack shape of my own. It would be very inconvenient if my friends could not see me, so I have taken the form of the Commendatore for the time being. Idea. The Commendatore. Maria repeated the words in her mind without voicing them. He can tell what I am thinking. Then she remembered. He was a figure in that very wide Japanese-style painting by Tomohiko Amada that she had seen in his studio. Somehow, he had slipped out of the painting and come here. That explained his tiny size. Affirmative, the Commendatore said. I am borrowing the form of that character. The Commendatore, I myself do not know his significance, but I am called by that sobriquet now. Wait here in silence. I will come for my friends at the proper time. Do not fear. These raiments will shelter you. These raiments will shelter me? What did that mean? But he did not respond to her unspoken question. A moment later, he was gone, vanished into thin air like vapor. Maria did as the Commendatore said. She quieted her breathing and didn't move a muscle. Menshiki was home. She had heard him enter the house. He seemed to have been shopping, for she could make out the rustle of paper bags. Her breathing almost stopped when his slippered feet padded slowly past the room where she was hiding. The closet door was a Venetian blind, so some light seeped upward through the slats, but only a tiny bit. The closet would grow very dark when the daylight faded. She could see only the carpeted floor through the cracks. The closet was cramped and filled with the sharp odor of mothballs. With walls on all sides, there was nowhere to hide and no way to escape. The lack of an escape route scared her to death. The Commendatore had promised to come and get her when the right time came. She had no choice but to believe him. He had said, "These raiments will shelter you, too." He must have meant the clothes there in the closet. Old clothes worn by some unknown woman, likely before Maria was even born. How could they protect her? She reached out and stroked a dress with a flower pattern. The pink cloth was soft to the touch. She let her fingertips linger for a while. She couldn't explain why, but there was something comforting about it. I bet this dress would fit, Maria thought. Its owner wasn't that much bigger than me. I can wear a size 5. Of course, my chest hasn't filled out yet, so I'd have to figure a way to conceal that. But I could wear most of these clothes if I wanted to, or if I had to for some reason. The thought made her heart skip a beat. Time was passing. Slowly but surely, the room was growing darker. Evening was approaching minute by minute. She looked at her watch, but she couldn't read it in the gloom. She pressed a button and the face lit up. It was almost 4:30. The sun would be going down soon. The days were getting shorter, and when night did come, Menshiki would head out to the deck. It would take him but a second to realize that someone had invaded his home. She had to find some way to deal with the shoes and binoculars before that happened. Maria waited impatiently for the Commendatore to arrive, her heart in her mouth. Yet he never did. Perhaps there had been some kind of hitch. Menshiki might have left him no opening. She hadn't a clue how extensive the actual powers of a person or an idea like the Commendatore were, in fact, or how far she could depend on him. Yet he was her only hope. She had nowhere else to turn. Maria sat holding her knees on the floor of the closet, staring through the slats at the carpet. From time to time, she reached up to stroke the flowery dress, as though it were a lifeline of some kind. When the room had grown quite dark, she heard footsteps in the hall a second time. Once again, they were slow and soft. The footsteps came to an abrupt halt in front of the room where she was hiding, as if whoever it was had sniffed out something. A moment later, she heard the door open, There could be no doubt. Her heart froze in her mouth. Then she heard the person, Manshiki, she presumed, no one else was in the house, step inside and gently close the door behind him. It clicked shut. The man is in the room, for sure. Like her, he held his breath and listened carefully, trying to pick up the slightest sign. She could tell. But the man did not turn on the light. Instead, he carried out his search in the dark. Why? Anyone else would have switched on the light the moment they came in. It baffled her. Maria stared at the floor through the slats. If he came close enough, his toes would come into view. She couldn't see them yet. Yet his presence felt very real. It was definitely a man. Moreover, that man, it had to be Manshiki, was staring at the closet door in the dark. He had picked up signs of something, something different than usual. Next, he would open the door. It couldn't be otherwise. It would be easy, since of course it wasn't locked. All he had to do was reach out, grab the knob, and pull. The footsteps drew even closer. Fear gripped her. Cold sweat dripped from her armpits. I should never have come, she thought. I should have stayed home like a good girl, in my dear home across the valley. There is something really scary about this place, something I should never have approached so recklessly. Some kind of consciousness operated here. The hornets were a part of it. Now she was within arm's reach of that something. She could see the toe of a slipper through the blinds. She could tell that the slipper was brown and made of leather, but it was too dark to see anything more. Maria instinctively reached up and grabbed the dress, the size 5 dress with the flower pattern. Please help me. Protect me, she prayed. The man stood in front of the closet's double doors for some time. He didn't make a sound. She couldn't even hear him breathe. Still as a stone statue, he stood there gauging the situation. The silence grew heavier, the dark more impenetrable. She huddled on the floor, quivering. Her teeth chattered faintly. Maria longed to shut her eyes and ears, to put her mind in a totally different place. But she didn't. She somehow knew how dangerous that would be. She must never give in to fear, however great, never abandon her senses, never stop thinking. With her ears pricked and her eyes fastened on the toes of the leather slippers, she fiercely clutched the hem of the soft pink dress. The clothes would protect her. The whole wardrobe was her ally. The size 5 dresses, the size 5 shoes, the 32C bras, they would enfold her in a cloak of invisibility. I am not here, she told herself. I am not here. How much time passed? She had no way of knowing. Time was no longer uniform, nor did it flow in sequence. Nevertheless, a fixed period seemed to have elapsed. At one point, the man had been on the verge of opening the door. Maria felt that strongly. She braced herself. When it opened, he would see her. She would see him. Then what? She had no clue. Perhaps it's not Manshiki at all, the thought popped into her head. But then, who could it be? Yet the man never opened the door. After some hesitation, he pulled back his hand and moved away. Why had he changed his mind at the last minute? Something must have held him back. He stepped out into the hallway and closed the door behind him. the room was empty again. For certain, it was no ruse. She was alone. She was certain of that. Maria closed her eyes and expelled all the air she had been holding in a great sigh. Her heart was still pounding, like a tom-tom. That's how a novelist might describe it. What was a tom-tom anyway? She had no clear picture. She had been in great peril. At the very last moment, however, something had intervened to protect her. Even so, this place was too dangerous, that much was obvious. Whoever it was, that someone had sensed her presence, beyond a doubt. She couldn't hide in this room forever. This time she had squeaked through. Next time, she might not be so lucky. She kept waiting. The room grew even darker, but she didn't make a sound. She was fearful, she was anxious, but she persevered. The commendatore would not forget her. She believed what he had told her. She had no other options. She had to rely on the little guy with the funny way of talking. Then, before she knew it, the commendatore was there.
"My friends must leave immediately," he whispered. "Now, at this very moment, wake up. It is now time."
Maria was at a loss. It was hard to stand up. When she imagined leaving the closet, she was assaulted by a new fear. Even greater dangers might await her in the world outside.
"Menshiki is in the shower,"
the commendatore said. "You know what a clean person he is. So he should linger there a while. But he will come out by and by. This is the one and only chance that my friends will have.
Make haste."
Marshalling her strength, Maria pulled herself to her feet. She pushed the door of the closet open. The room was dark and empty. Before she stepped out, she turned to take one last look at the clothes hanging there. She inhaled the smell of mothballs. She might never see these clothes again. For some reason, they had become so close to her, so dear.
"My friends must go now," said the commendatore. "There is not much time. Go into the hallway and turn left."
With her bag over her shoulder, Maria walked out the door and down the corridor. She ran up the stairs, cut across the big living room, and slid open the glass door to the deck terrace. The Hornet might still be around, or he might have retired for the night. He could be the kind of insect that wasn't fazed by the dark, but she couldn't dwell on that now. She stepped out, unscrewed the binoculars from their stand, and returned them to their plastic cover. She folded the stand and leaned it back against the wall. Her nerves made her hands fumble, so it took longer than she had expected. Then she picked her black loafers up off the deck. All the while, the commendatore sat on the stool and watched her. The Hornet never showed itself, to Maria's great relief.
"Well done," said the commendatore with a nod.
"Now go back inside, shut the door, and descend the stairs to the very bottom." Down two flights of stairs? That would mean plunging into the depths of the house. Wasn't she trying to escape? "There is no chance of escaping now," the commendatore said, reading her mind. He shook his head from side to side. "The gate is strictly barred. My friends are constrained to hide a while longer. I beseech you to listen." Maria had no choice but to believe the commendatore. She hurried through the living room and down the two flights of stairs. The maid's room was at the bottom. Beside it was the laundry room, and next to that, a storeroom. At the end of the hallway was the gym with its row of exercise machines. The commendatore pointed to the maid's room. "This is your hiding place," he said. "Menshiki seldom ventures into that room. He descends once a day to do his laundry and to exercise, but he almost never enters there.
It is unlikely he will find my friends should you remain quiet. The room has a sink and a refrigerator. In case of earthquake, an ample store of food and mineral water has been set aside, so my friends will not starve. There is enough to live in relative safety for a number of days.
A number of days? Maria asked, albeit without speaking, incredulously, her shoes in hand. I must remain here that long?
Affirmative. It is a shame, but my friends are obliged to stay here for such a time, the commendatore said, shaking his tiny head. This house is kept under tight guard, in more than one way. This is a fact I cannot alter. An idea's powers are limited, I am sad to say.
How long will I have to stay here? Maria asked in a small voice. I have to go home soon. My aunt will worry about me. If I'm missing too long, she'll have to report it to the police. Then there will be a real mess.
The commendatore shook his head. A million pardons, but this is outside my control. My friends must wait here.
Is Mr. Manshiki dangerous?
A very hard question to answer, the commendatore said. He made an exaggerated frown. Manshiki himself is not an evil man. He is a decent sort, one could say, with abilities that exceed those of most people. There is even a hint of nobility in him, if one looks hard enough. Yet there is a gap in his heart, an empty space that attracts the abnormal and the dangerous. It is there that the problem lies.
Maria wasn't clear what all of this meant, of course. The abnormal? Who was the person standing outside the closet door? She asked. Was that Manshiki?
It was Manshiki, but at the same time it was not Manshiki.
Is he aware of any of this?
Most likely, the commendatore said. Most likely. But there is nothing he can do about it.
The abnormal and the dangerous? Perhaps the hornet she had seen was one of the forms those things took, Maria thought.
Affirmative. Beware of those hornets. They are most virulent creatures, the commendatore read her mind.
Virulent?
They have the power to kill my friends, the commendatore explained. For now, my friends have no choice but to stay here. Do not go outside.
Virulent, Maria repeated in her mind. The word sure had a sinister ring.
Maria opened the door of the maid's room and went in. It was little larger than Manshiki's bedroom closet. There was a kitchenette with a fridge, a hot plate, a small microwave oven, and a sink and faucet. There was also a bed and a tiny bathroom. The bed was bare, but there were blankets, quilts, and a pillow on the shelf, and a simple table and chair for meals. Only a single chair, though. A small window faced the valley. She could look out across it through a crack in the curtain.
It is best to make as little noise as possible, the commendatore said.
Do my friends understand? Maria nodded. You are a brave girl, my friends, said the commendatore. A touch reckless, perhaps, but brave nonetheless. It is an admirable quality. But while you are here, you must be very alert. Never be caught off guard. This is no ordinary place. Sinister things are skulking out there that could cause you harm.
Skulking?
Prowling about, in short.
Maria nodded. In what way was this no ordinary place, and what sort of sinister things were skulking? She wanted to know, but couldn't think how to ask. Where to begin? There was just so much she couldn't understand.
I may not be able to come again, the commendatore said, as if imparting a secret. There is another place I must go, and another task I must look after. A very important task, if I may say. So I fear I cannot help my friends any further. Hereafter, my friends must manage on your own. But how can I escape this place by myself?
The commendatore narrowed his eyes and looked squarely at Mari.